And welcome into Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Loaded show for you today. Former NFL linebacker DeMarcus Ware will join us at 8 o'clock. Our man Charles Robinson stops by at 9 to get into the latest in the NFL with him. Lots of headlines to get on with Charles today, including some trades, maybe some potential trades looming on the horizon. Then, of course, the Super Bowl coming up this weekend, so we'll talk to Charles about that at 9 o'clock. And then C-Mace, Chris Mason, drops by at 9:30 to get in on the latest with the Nashville Predators. Fellas, what's going on? Joe Rex Road, how are we doing?
Good. Good to see you.
Good to see
you.
I feel great.
Yeah?
Well rested.
Refreshed?
Yes. Had the one day off. Feel great. Ryan Porth, thanks for filling in yesterday.
You are so welcome.
You look great.
Thank you. You don't say
he doesn't
that
know
every
how
day,
to handle
so.
That.
I know. I don't hear that often.
Well, thanks, so. Robbie. All righty. Thanks, Robbie.
I like the hat.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've only worn it like 30 times since the start of the show.
Hey, look. It looks especially good today.
Okay.
We're a minute and a half in, and we're highly complimentary.
I have never had this much positivity towards my looks, so I'm going to just walk away now. And good to see you guys this morning.
That's what we're here for. Glad we can make your day, Ryan Porth.
Going to leave the table while I'm winning.
That's right. We got a lot to get into today. We'll talk about the Titans, maybe some potential off-season moves to make as well. But we're going to start on the Nashville Predators. And a rough start to this road trip in Tampa Bay. They lose on Saturday night. They followed up last night, Joe, with a 5-2 loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And we get it. Tampa Bay, obviously very good. The defending Stanley Cup champions. But you spot them a 4-goal lead, and it's going to be pretty much impossible to come back at that point against this team.
Yeah, and you take the penalties that you can't take, and I mean that goal at the end of the first period. I tried to watch it over and over again. I don't know that anything's different. Hey, who knows? Like you change one thing, you know, I'm always fascinated by that. You know, like change one thing in history, and then can you count on all the events that happened since then to be the same?
Right.
Or if it's just 3-0, maybe the Lightning make it 5-0 in the second. But all I know is the Preds fought back, and if you just didn't give up that fourth goal in the first with 0.4 of a second left, who knows? Maybe it's different. Maybe in that last push you can get one in. I mean, it's that last goal, I still don't understand how that happened, but that was just bizarre. And just part of a very frustrating night for the Preds.
Well, it's really frustrating because you go back and look at the replay. I mean, Tampa Bay's got the puck in their own end with 5 seconds left. I mean, you can't get scored on when the other team.
You can't give up a 2-on-0.
I mean, the puck's 160 feet away from your net with 5 seconds left. You cannot give up a goal in that situation. And it was one of those things where at times I thought they were being over aggressive, like on the first goal. Ryan Ellis goes to keep the puck in and tries to jam himself up against the boards to keep it in. It gets by him, and all of a sudden it's a 2-on-1 with Stamkos and Palat. And Josi did a great job of breaking it up,
yeah.
And the puck gets there anyway. I mean, it was just one of those things where you're over-aggressive at times. You get some bad bounces. But really the bottom line comes down to it's just a lack of finish on this team right now. You've got 0 goals from Ryan Johansson, 0 goals from Matt Duchene. Ellie Tolvanen comes in last night and finds a way onto the board. But they had, you know, a couple of opportunities early in that game, which has been a story all season long to this point, that you're just not able to finish on. And that's really plaguing this team right now. I mean, they come into the game yesterday. They were 27th in the league in goals per game. They were 2.38 goals per game. It's hard to win that way when you're not getting enough goal production. And then you factor in the penalty troubles that they've been having as well. I mean, it's been a rough formula so far through the first 9 games.
Yeah, and you know, I think the goaltending has been fine, but it does seem like there's like a game where it's like this is where you got to bail everybody out, you know, and it's just not quite at the level you need it to be. Again, you play Tampa Bay, you're playing the best, you're playing the defending champs. You know, I mean, this is as good as it gets right now, but it's also kind of probably depressing for Preds fans who remember not that long ago when their team was one of those teams, and now they just don't look. They do not match up. They're outclassed by a team like that right now.
And as you said, some early penalty trouble last night. I mean, you take a penalty a minute and a half into the game, and I know they killed it off, but, I mean, it's hard to really establish yourself and get rolling the way you want to get rolling when you're taking penalties so early and so often. And you could tell. I mean, after the game last night, John Hines, he's frustrated right now about these penalties, about the, you know, the consistency with which they're being taken. And John Hines talked about, there's only so long I'm going to put up with this. And it was some really interesting comments from John Hines last night. Here's what he had to say after the loss to Tampa Bay.
Hey, John, just curious from your perspective, what kind of domino effect does the falling behind early have? I mean, a penalty, there's a lot of things that contribute to it, but overall, as the game goes on, do you see a domino effect in terms of energy and expending energy that maybe you could use in other ways because you guys are falling behind so early?
Yeah, I think the penalties is a big thing with it. You know, this is going to be addressed for – there's only so many times you can dress until you have that. You've got to put a stop to it. So we're going to have a discussion about this prior to our next game for the last time. That's one. You know, once you have to kill that many penalties, your bench gets disrupted. Guys that, you know, don't penalty kill, they're out. And then when the Lions come back, you know, it gets – you got to get a little bit of a reset coming out of that. And then, you know, when you're coming from behind, I think if it's one or two, you know, it's still a – you're still right in there, but when it gets to three, you know, sometimes you got to, and possibly you got to overplay some guys that, you know, you think are possibly going to be able to produce or playing well. So I think there's multiple effects, but I'd say when we've gotten games where we've been in penalty trouble, that's probably the biggest issue.
So you hear Predators head coach John Hines there say, quote, there's only so many times you can address it before you've got to put a stop to it. We're going to have a conversation about it prior to our next game for the last time. Pretty strong words there from John Hines.
What does that mean?
I think that means if you start taking some bad penalties, you're going to find yourself on the bench. Problem is, there have been a lot of bad penalties. You're going to find a lot of people on the bench at that
point. I mean, like Yossi, you know, took the first one, right? And it was just
he's not going on the bench.
Right. You know, I mean, and that was just one of those, you just reach and you trip, and it's like, no, don't do it. I mean, I know I'm sitting here telling Roman Yossi what to do on the ice.
Yeah, I mean, there are penalties you can live with and penalties you can't. I mean, if you're being really aggressive, going in there, fighting for the puck, and you take an interference penalty, okay, you can probably live with that. It's the trippings and the penalties in the offensive zone, which they've taken a few of those as well, that are just totally unnecessary. And that's been part of it. Look, I didn't like all the calls last night. I thought on the first one that Tenorti was called for. There was a dive involved on that one, but you can't put your hands there. I mean, It's some of those are just putting yourself in position where the ref's going to make the call. They're not going to get it right all the time. And not all the penalties have been bad ones, but they do have a discipline problem pretty evidently early in this season. And with the way their penalty kill is rolling right now, I mean, you can't have that. I mean, you're giving up power play goals every night at this point. That, you're not going to win that way.
So, okay, so the penalty season was 17-18, right?
That's correct.
That was the penalty season.
Yes.
The power play season was 18-19.
Yes.
Last year was like a lot of different things, and now this is the penalty kill season.
Yeah.
And when you have the penalties and the penalty kill as a problem together,
not good.
That's some problems that's compounding themselves.
That's a bad recipe.
Yeah. It is.
And then there's the Stars not scoring. We got a good poll question. I'm really interested to see how that goes today.
Yeah, we're going to introduce that poll question right now. Today's poll question at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. Which element of this Preds team has been the most frustrating through the first nine games of the season? The options are the production or lack thereof from the Stars, the penalty kill, the power play, or goaltending. We are very, very early in the voting process right now. 50% going with production from the Stars. 31% say penalty kill, 17% power play, only 2% with the goaltending so far. So lots of frustration early on in the voting on the production from the Stars, which we'll get to in just a minute.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite to win.
Yeah, that's my favorite to win too. Although I will say the penalty kill, that's what I probably at this point get the most tweets about on a nightly basis is the penalty kill.
Yeah.
Like the law of averages is saying like at some point it's got to get better than it's been.
What was it last night?
Well, they gave up one.
I mean, they killed one, and they gave up a goal
later. So they gave up one technically, and they gave up one that was basically like 4 seconds after a power play.
Yeah.
So it doesn't count.
But it's basically the inability to clear
And some of it was just – and that goal specifically, I mean, there's so much standing around watching going on out there last night. I mean, they enter the zone through the blue line. I get it. Tampa Bay is really good. They very well could go on to repeat. And the fact they're doing this without Nikita Kucherov is pretty incredible because, obviously, he's really good. And we know how important he is to Tampa Bay. But There's just there's a whole lot of standing around watching Tampa Bay operate last night. And, you know, even the Stamkos goal, it goes in. It's a bad bounce. I think it deflected off of Fabbro from his shot there. But it's like, hey, put a body on that guy. Close the gap on that guy. I mean, he scored a million goals from that exact spot. It just, they've got a lot of issues right now on the penalty kill.
Well, Tampa Bay last year basically won the cup without Stamkos.
Yeah, exactly.
So you put Stamkos in the lineup, you take Kucherov out.
It's just fair. It's more fair for everybody else, yeah. I guess.
I mean, just imagine if they had Kucherov. They'd be blowing every team out. By the way, the Lightning were 1-for-4 on the power play last night.
Yeah. So 1-for-4 with the right after the horn second goal. So penalty kill's got a chance today, but I think the Stars are going to win.
We'll see. And it's going to be interesting to monitor. I have a feeling goaltending will come in last in this poll. And look, I go back and look at the goals. I don't think you can blame UC Saros for any of them last night, but I also think it's fair to say, like, most of the time so far, whether it's been Pekka or Saros, you're not getting, like, bailed out time and time again, which we've seen at times, Pekka especially, be able to do that throughout his career.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's, in some of these games, and I don't know if, I mean, like last night, if you get the one that went between Fabbro's legs, whether it went off him or not, it was a weird goal. If you get that one, do you win? You still don't win the game, right? But you need a little bit more there.
The goal differential so far in like the periods have been outstanding. They've been blown away in the first and second periods. I think the tally right now is 20-6 is how much they've been outscored in the first and second periods. And then doing well in the third. I think they're outscoring like 14-8 or something like that in third. So third period, playing well if you're the Predators. Maybe start that process a little bit sooner.
Yeah, some of it, you know, maybe you're down, at least in a few of these games, you're down big, you fight back, you close it out. Of course, they've had some real clutch goals here too. So you gotta play better. You gotta play. Can you put together a complete game? Everybody talks about that. No, the answer is very rarely do you put together a complete game, but you can't have a disaster period.
Right.
Like, start there. Start without having the disaster period.
So we've talked about the offense and the struggle so far through the first 9 games. How do you solve this problem if you're the Predators? Can this group that they have currently actually solve this problem? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
4 games now against the cup finalists from last season. Results have gone against you, but wondering, I guess, if you can sort of evaluate how you feel the Predators stand in comparison with those teams. And I guess the second part to that is how important, obviously, is it to establish beating these teams from time to time, given the schedule this year?
Yeah, I think it's been mixed results against these teams, you know, particularly when against Dallas and Tampa, like you said, we played them twice each in the total of 4. And, you know, it's not a good enough overall game for us to be able to find a way to win them. Whether we get penalty trouble, both Dallas and Tampa we did. And understanding, like, you can play these teams, they're rolling out the same game every night. There's no time and space. Everyone through their lineup works a certain way. They stick to the way that they want to play. And for us, we've got to get better against these teams. And that's something we've talked with our team about, and it's not good enough right now.
That was Predators head coach John Hines after the loss last night to the Tampa Bay Lightning, dropping the Predators to 4-5-0 on the season. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, you look at the record so far for the Predators against some of the top competition in this division. That obviously is Tampa Bay, Carolina, and Dallas right now. And 2 of those 3 Stanley Cup finalists last year. Predators 0-5 against those teams. And specifically against Tampa Bay and Dallas, they've lost the games in different ways. Some have been completely lopsided. Some have been closer. But it's interesting, John Hines points out in that clip there, when he's talking about playing against Tampa, playing against Dallas, those teams bring the same game to the table every night. I thought that comment was interesting and probably lets you know where John Hines is on this group right now, and that is the consistency of performance that you're looking for and that he's been searching for and trying to build with this group. It's just not there right there at this point. So, look, I like a lot of things the Predators have done so far this year. I like a lot of the 5-on-5 numbers analytically that you're seeing. But right now, I mean, you're 4-5. Those things don't matter all that much, especially in a year like this where it's more of a sprint this year than it is a marathon with a 56-game schedule. As you look at the Predators so far and the results against the upper echelon teams in this league, like Tampa Bay, like Dallas, like Carolina, you're 0-5. How concerned are you if you're a Predators fan that you're just not in the same ballpark with those teams right now?
Well, if you're a Predators fan who was realistic, you knew that, right? I mean, this team isn't all that far from, I think, what we thought, which is that they're going to be fighting probably for the four to get into the playoffs. And so that's fine. You just, I guess, if it's like if you just beat the teams below you or around you and you never beat the good teams, there's something depressing about that. You know, you like to rise up and get a win every once in a while against some of the best in the league. And it's also kind of weird because people are used to seeing the Preds beat that team and play well against that team. Very different. Now you have to face them over and over again. You get them again next week at home. So I think we're seeing the gap between the Preds and the top teams. But also, I mean, look, last night, Duchesne, again, has a primo chance and just sort of lifts it over the net. And you know, the camera closes in on him, and, man, he's angry. And I don't blame him. And you feel for him. But the bottom line is, like you said, at some point you look at the record. What is it? Okay, what are you? At some point you look at Duchesne and Johansson, $8 million apiece. You see no goals for either of them. You see Tolvanen now has more goals than either of them in his one game. And you're like, at some point, like, that's got to change.
Yeah. Now, look, I kind of view them in a separate lens right now. I mean, Matt Duchesne, I think, has played pretty well.
Agreed.
Game in and game out. I mean, he's right there. He's right on the doorstep. Like, at some point, you got to finish. I understand that. Like, nobody really cares about the chances that you get. You got to finish them. At some point, you're getting paid to finish those chances. I don't think Ryan Johansson's played very well the last four or five games. I mean, I know he got on the board in terms of some assist on Saturday night, but he just doesn't look like he is in the battle, in front of the net, generating those chances. You're talking about a guy that he's not going to score a ton of goals anyway. Like that's not been his game since he's come with the Predators. But I kind of view those two in different lenses right now, and it was interesting. And John Hines didn't make a whole lot of it last night in the post-game press conference. But you're in the third period. The game's 5-on-5. There were no penalties taken during this stretch. And there's a 7-minute stretch where Johansson's on the bench and Arvidsson is on the bench. They're not on the ice for 7 minutes in a row. And Arvidsson is weird because Arvidsson has 8 shots on goal through the first two periods.
Got a shot every time he's on
but
the ice.
But Ryan Johansson, I mean, we saw this at times last year with some of these top players of – they found their way on the bench, and it was hard for them to get on the ice through some of these games. Now, I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was intentional by John Hines. Like I said, after the game, he kind of said, yeah, you know, there was nothing behind it. It was just kind of the flow of the game. But 7 minutes, that's a pretty long stretch when you're trying to come back in a game with Ryan Johansson not being on the ice. I wonder how much of that was intentional.
Yeah, well, if it was just Johansson, I think it'd be obvious because we've seen it time and time again with him, right? And it matches up with just not quite. He just doesn't quite look like, you know, what he should look like out there. He's not making enough of impact. But then I don't get the Arvidsson thing. If it's punitive, I don't know. Arvidsson like leaking out, not being responsible. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Like it's 7 minutes. It's not a long, long time. Like it's not like they were on the pine for 15 minutes. But it's also like, how do you lose your first line for that long a time and not notice them on the ice? Like I'm trying to figure out what's going on there.
For a team that, you know, doesn't have a whole bunch of, you know, highly productive offensive threats at forward.
Right. I mean, it was interesting
to come back.
And you know, you factor that in with some, I think, pretty obvious frustration that John Hines had in his post-game press conference last night, a lot of which surrounded the penalties that we've already played the clip of. I mean, you could tell. I mean, he wants more out of this group, and they're going to have to get more. I mean, like I said, coming into the game last night, you're 27th in goals per game, 2.38 goals per game. So it's early. I mean, you still got, you know, a lot of sample size left out there, but I don't think this is a huge surprise that they're struggling offensively. That was the concern we had heading into this season. I mean, where are the goals going to come from? Can you have your best players be your best players on a nightly basis? So far, I mean, the answer's largely been no. Forsberg's been good. I think Arvidsson has largely been good. Duchesne, I think, is playing well, but at some point, the production's got to match. I mean, you've got a combined 6 points through nine games from your top two centermen. It's not good enough. You're not going to win that way.
I will find the bright spot that Elli Tolvanen played and scored. And, hey, that one timer looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Let it go. Hey. Let it roll, man.
Goal per game. See what pace he can right do. Now.
That's right. Elli Tolvanen. And he was on the got a little power play time, which to me, I mean, if he's in your lineup, absolutely, that's part of his role. So,
I mean, with how much
let's see what he's got.
Yeah, well, I mean, with how much they're struggling to generate goals, I mean, I don't think Tolvanen is a player that you can afford to scratch every night. I mean, at some point, we have to know what he is, and if he can help you score goals, then I'd rather have him in the lineup than some of these other players that don't really provide much offensively.
Look, I agree.
100%.
Especially with your first point. Like, at some point, you just got to see what the kid has. Like, what does he bring to the table at the NHL level? Now, look, I'll say this. And I noticed a few times out there last night where he is still pretty raw, and he got caught out of position a few times. And that's the concern with Tolvanen being out there is – what is he like away from the puck? I still think there's some work to do in that area. But the shot's great. I mean, the shot's always been great. And he found a way to get open last night and puts it home on the chance that he gets. So I agree. I think at some point you've got to see what you have. And with as offensively challenged as this group has been so far, that shot, you've got to utilize it. I mean, Richardson's out last night. He's dealing with an injury. I mean, Olivier's come in and played well, but he's not a guy I think you count on offensively. I mean, you just look through their lineup right now from a depth perspective. The offense is hard to find, hard to come by. Maybe Tolvanen's a spark.
Preds. God dang it. it's been a while. Preds Twitter got on a Craig Smith jag last night.
Yeah.
So that'll be – he's the new James Neal. Craig Smith –
we've seen enough guy. Craig Smith know what Craig Smith is. Craig Smith
is a guy who scored goals.
He's a guy who scores. He'll give you 20. He'll also disappear for about 25 games. And that's what Craig Smith is. Which, look,
would
that's
you
fine.
Not
he's
take
a good
that,
player.
Though? I mean, I'm just saying.
He's
like,
a good player. I mean, that's fine. But I think if anybody out there thinking that Craig Smith is the difference in this team right now, I got news for you. He's not.
Kyle Turris has more goals than Duchesne and Johansson.
Well, yeah.
How many does he have?
He's got two.
Yeah.
All right.
And so does James Neal.
Got two.
Oh, bring it back.
Should have carried
him over. There was a nice James Neal goal from Kyle Turris the other night off the faceoff in Edmonton.
That's beautiful. Everyone leaves and flourishes. Kevin Fiala, he's got a goal, right?
Yeah. He also got suspended for 3 games.
Take the good with the bad.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's interesting. Like, as you look at this team, and based on really the sample size now, that you can talk about this season being a short sample size, and it is, but the struggles they've had offensively now, not really a short sample size. I mean, this has been an issue for a while now, and especially with Johansson and Duchesne, the production just has not been there the last year, really, with these two. Is there a way that they can pull themselves out of it? Like, as you look at this team offensively, is there a way that you feel confident at all that they get into – I mean, heck, the middle of the pack in the NHL offensively at this point.
Well, like you said, Duchesne is playing well. Duchesne is creating chances. He's aggressive. He's active. It might be one of those things where he gets one and a few follow that. Granlund's playing well. Oh, by the way, picked a click. 3 for me, 0 for you,
thank
0
you.
For you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So I think there is some hope there, but I'm not seeing it. You know, Johansson is – it was a big question for me this year. It's like, how far into the season are we going to get before we're complaining about Johansson and he's sitting out shifts and all this stuff? And
nine games.
Here we are. It's just that to me is really the thing that has to change. And again, I agree with you totally that it's just two totally different stories right now. I'm watching Duchesne make, you know, put himself in position, and I mean, he is all over the place trying to make something happen.
Johansson was totally invisible last night.
You can't have it. You can't have it. And he knows that. And if he knows that, and we've all talked about it, and we went through a whole year about it, and Then you went into the whole break before the bubble and talked about it, and he responded, and now we're back to that? I don't know, man. At some point, it becomes just hard to tolerate.
Yeah, it does. And look, I had some tweets last night about, you know, he got his money and got paid, and that's it. I mean, he's just kind of going through the motions right now, which, I mean, I understand that way of thinking, but you look back to the 2 years after he got paid, he was really good, really good. Had 50 assists in one of those years. So I really buy into that. Like, I don't think that he's just out there, you know what, I got my contract. I just, you know what, I don't care anymore. I'm going through the motions.
No, I don't think that's it.
That gets used as an excuse way too much in professional sports.
Right. No, I don't. Yeah. I mean, if that was the case, like you said, he would have fallen off the cliff a few years ago. So, but he, you know, look, I mean, he talked last year, like watching film and not being able to figure. I mean, obviously, I'm sure it's frustrating for him, too. It's not like he's out there like, I'm just not going to try tonight. But whatever it is, in the bubble, we saw it. And it was, oh, wow, look at that guy. That's, oh, remember him? You can't lose that guy again, especially this team. This team can't afford to not have that guy every night.
Nope, and that's going to be something to continue to monitor as the year goes on. We got a lot more to talk about with the Predators coming up in today's show. But when we come back, Super Bowl week is upon us, and as we look at our local professional football team, how close are they to making an appearance in this game? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. It's Super Bowl week here in the NFL, and that's got us thinking. If you look at the Tennessee Titans, how far away are they from potentially competing in this game? Obviously, one Super Bowl appearance in the history of the franchise. It ended in heartbreaking fashion, 1 yard short, Kevin Dyson back in 2000 against the St. Louis Rams. And Joe, ESPN has come out with a list, and the way they've kind of categorized this, looking around the NFL, is in five different groups. You've got your current contenders on the cusp, 1 year out, 2 years out, 3 years out, and 4 or 5 years out, which 4 or 5 years out in the NFL, I mean, might as well be an eternity at this point. Like, how do you project 5 years out? But as you look at the Titans, where do you think they fall in the group of contenders? Of how ESPN has ranked the most likely Super Bowl contenders over the next few years. Do you think they're right on the cusp, maybe a year away, 3 years out? Where do you think it falls with the Titans?
See, I think stuff like this weird right now because I have no idea what their team looks like next year. I mean, we're done with this year.
We are.
We're going to have a totally different team next year. So, not totally different team, but, you know, we're going to see the Titans make moves and good or bad, lose guys, sign guys, draft guys. I mean, I think if they have a good offseason, then they're right there. But they also have coaching. We haven't heard your take on the coaching situation, by the way. Ryan Porth expressed a little anger yesterday at the
Shane Bowen?
At the Shane Bowen / Todd Downing, especially Shane Bowen.
Yeah, I don't have a huge problem with Todd Downing. I get wanting to keep things going and moving along offensively. That's fine. I don't think the system's going to change all that much now. Being in the same department as a play caller, that's going to be very difficult to accomplish. The Shane Bowen thing to me, I don't know if inexcusable is the right word, but it is a bad look to go from a defense that was that bad. And I realize, I agree with you, personnel problems. I think those personnel problems got hindered even more by Shane Bowen not having any idea what he was doing out there. And I think coming back in the same – if you have a bad defense again next year, to me – you can talk about the personnel all you want. Some of it has to fall on coaching at that point, too. So
now, wait a minute. Now, you said, and I don't want to be like the Shane Bowen defender of Nashville. You said not having any idea what he's doing. How could you know that?
Well, look at the results.
Oh, the results were terrible.
Yeah.
That says he doesn't have any idea what he's doing?
Well, if it says he does have an idea of what he's doing, and that's what happened, I would be very concerned if I'm a Titans fan.
Yeah. I mean, so this is one of those things where I don't think it's a good hire. I think he should have gone outside. I think he's put him in a bad spot. I look at Mike Vrabel, and I think people are down on him pretty amazingly for what he's done. But, like, if you're Mike Vrabel, do you think Mike Vrabel's like, well, he's my buddy. He sucks. He doesn't know what he's doing, but he's my buddy. I'm going to give him a job.
I don't think he feels that way.
I mean, I think Mike Vrabel kind of knows what's going on in the football field and with his coaching staff on a daily basis, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, I'm just saying.
That's fine.
I don't think Shane speak for themselves.
Kevin Byard sucked this year.
Right.
Jayon Brown, he was fine. Rashawn Evans sucked this year.
Yep.
Is that on them or is that on the coaching? Or was Dean Pease that great where he made those guys look better than they actually were?
I don't know. But I can't look at it and say, well, that means Shane Bowen has no idea what he's doing. Right? I think you have to say.
What was Shane Bowen in charge of last year? The defense and the outside linebackers.
Yep.
How'd those two groups do last year?
Well, the outside linebackers group did great because they signed Beasley and Clowney, who did nothing, and he's out there coaching Brooks Reed. Again, I don't want to be put in the corner of I'm defending Shane Bowen, but I'm just saying maybe we're being a little dramatic with the Shane Bowen's an idiot, has no clue.
I'd say he's an idiot.
Et cetera. Well, if he doesn't have any idea what he's doing, I mean, that's not far from idiot. I mean, you're within a step or two of idiot. I don't know why those guys regressed. I think it's absolutely fair to say coaching has to be a part of it. Dean Pease leaves. They miss Dean Pease for sure. We don't know what Shane Bowen did every day. He talked to us once a week. We saw bad results on the field. Was Kevin Byard bad because Shane Bowen screwed him up? Or was Kevin Byard bad because he's regressing as a player? Or is it because the rest of the defense was so crappy that he started doing things to try to compensate? I don't know. I'm sure it's probably some combination. Clearly Shane Bowen's a downgrade from Dean Pease. I think some of the reaction to this has been dramatic. To the point, again, with Vrabel, I've been amazed on like the story comments and stuff. Like, Vrabel's got to be in the hot seat. He's got to be out of here. You know, I'm like, dude, the guy's 31 and 21. He has a division
title. I don't
know
if I go that far.
Like, it's not like the random person here or there, you know? There's a lot of anger over this, which I get. The defense was so bad that it sort of reduced the enjoyment of an 11-5 season. But I got to say, like, at some point, I am going to, like, give Vrabel some benefit of the doubt that he kind of knows what happens in his building on a daily basis. Hey, look, if they're bad next year, Shane Bowen will be public enemy number one in Nashville. No doubt about it. So if Vrabel's whole plan here was, like, to take pressure off him in this one year, see how he did and all that stuff, all it's done is now put everything on, oh, my gosh, this guy is the problem, whether it's true or not. I just don't necessarily buy that it is true. I certainly buy that he's no Dean Pease.
Well, it just comes off as defending your boy. Like, that's what it comes off. And I don't know if that's the case or not. Mike Vrabel seems like the type of guy that, regardless of what it is, he'll do it if it's best for the football team. That's what it seems like. But I don't know how loyal he is to these guys. I don't know what the steps he's willing to take to make sure they succeed. I don't know what that looks like with Mike Vrabel. But you have a defense that is historically bad. And to come back with the same operation next year, I understand why that rubs Titans fans the wrong way.
I do too. No, I do too. It's just hard. I mean, there are limitations, you know. Now, look, this is where you ask coaches questions and say, okay, tell us what's going on. And unfortunately, Vrabel's one of those guys who doesn't like to do that. And Vrabel's never going to be influenced by what we say or what fans say. And that's to his credit. It's just, I think there's so many factors in how bad that defense was last year. And if they get good players, I do think of Keith Carter. I think of last year Keith Carter, who Jared fired 17 times, you know, by October, but Jared wasn't alone. A lot of people did. Like, this guy's got to go. This offensive line sucks. Now it's like, Keith Carter, he should have been the OC. He was great. Look at this offense. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of information we don't have. You're right. The results are ultimately the judge of this. And if they're bad, it'll be on Bowen, whether it is or not, for real. But I just, like, I can't, like, Vrabel wants his defense, Warren. It's his defense. It's not going to change. And Vrabel's not going to do something like, this is my buddy, Shane Bowen. I love the guy. You know, we play hoops in the driveway, and I'm just going to give him this job. I don't buy that at all. He must believe that Shane Bowen's good.
Look, I hear you. I hear everything you're saying, and I agree with a lot of it. It's also, you look at the personnel, it was bad this year on the outside linebacker part of it. Was it really that much worse than it's been the last 2 years? was it really that much worse? Like, it's not like Dean Pease was out there working with these studs on the outside coming in and creating pass rush.
No, he schemed up pressure.
I don't think it was that much worse. So if it wasn't that much worse, why was the drop-off so gigantic? It was a massive drop-off. You went from 43 sacks to 19.
Yeah.
No, what do you point to in that situation?
Well, I point to Dean Pease being a wizard. Yeah, I mean, because really, I'm trying to figure out, looking back at that 2019 team, like, yeah, they had Correa, Landry gets, what did Landry get, eight, I guess. Landry had a little bit better year. Logan Ryan gets, what did he have, five,
Landry was
six?
Able to actually move at the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than playing every down.
No, I mean, look, if you're telling me who's a better D coordinator, Dean Pease or Shane Bowen, I mean,
well, yeah,
certainly.
Look.
Certainly. I'm not making the argument. I'm just, like, the whole thing with, like, Shane Bowen is incompetent off last year, I think, is a leap. Clearly, the whole thing was not connected like it should have been, and players talked about that. They talked about communication. They talked about coordination. Yes, that falls on him. Does it make any difference now that you take outside linebackers off his plate and he has the title and it's like, this is your defense? I don't know. We'll see. But I still think the biggest difference is if John Robinson doesn't have a goose egg offseason like he had last offseason. Then maybe Shane Bowen will get smart again.
Maybe so. Maybe we'll find out the answer to that question this offseason. ESPN's got him 1 year away from being a true Super Bowl contender. So the other teams on that part of the list, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Cleveland Browns, the 49ers, and the Indianapolis Colts, which is amazing because we have no clue who the quarterback's going to be for the Indianapolis Colts.
With a lot of those teams, you know.
Yeah.
Like the 49ers are apparently trying to get Cousins. So,
oh, your boy Kirk Cousins sneaking back in there. The Cardinals on that list too, by the way. 1 year away.
Huh. Interesting. And who's like who's on the cusp? And the Bills are a notch above that.
On the cusp is the Los Angeles Rams, Stafford coming in there, the Seattle Seahawks, the Baltimore Ravens, and the New Orleans Saints are on the cusp. With maybe Famous Jameis leading the way.
I don't get it.
I don't know why they made this list now.
Exactly. We don't know who these teams are.
These teams are going to look different 3 to 4 months from now.
The outright contenders are the Green Bay Packers, the Buffalo Bills, the Tampa Bay Bucks, and the Kansas City Chiefs. So going out on a limb here on this list that the final four are the contenders for the Super Bowl.
Who did this list?
It doesn't have a name. It just says
no one
ESPN
wanted to take credit for
NFL
this.
Nation. That's all it says.
Like the four years away team, one of them is the Bengals.
Yeah.
I get it. The Bengals are always like 4 years away, but they also have Joe Burrow.
Those guys are 4 years out. 4 years from now, they're going to be really good.
The Bengals have been 4 years away for 20 years, 30 years.
Yeah.
But you have Joe Burrow. If you put together a couple good drafts and make some good signings in free agency, maybe you're only 2 years away.
Hey, getting closer.
Oh, yeah. Happens all the time.
The getting closer list of 2 years away, the Miami Dolphins, which you understand, the L.A. Chargers with Herbert coming in, the Dallas Cowboys getting closer to a Super Bowl title.
Okay.
Is that what you saw when you watched the Cowboys this year? It's like, man, yeah, they're making some improvements along the way.
Well, I mean they didn't have their players, but still, yeah.
Even with their players in the first few games, it was obvious they were overrated.
Their defense was abysmal.
Getting closer.
Yeah, the four-year thing in the NFL, I mean, how many years away were the Titans? And I know it's not like they've been to the Super Bowl, but how many years away were they, like, as of going into 2016? Seven?
Well, and that's the other part of this. Like, you're trying to determine, hey, the Titans are 1 year away. Oh, by the way, Kansas City's still playing in the AFC next year, so good luck with that. Have fun with that. That's the other part of this list where you're like, okay, where's Kansas City going?
Yeah.
Doesn't look like they're going anywhere.
Exactly. Everybody's not going to win.
So when we come back, we've talked a lot about Shane Bowen and the Titans defense in this segment. There's a name out there that could be available that I'm very interested to see if the Titans try to kick the tires on. We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking about the Tennessee Titans. So we had a lot of discussion about the defense. Looking ahead, though, to this offseason, a name that could be out there that I think is at least intriguing if you're the Titans, J.J. Watt. Now, we see what's happening right now in Houston with Deshaun Watson and the saga that has been. reports coming out over the weekend that many people believe J.J. Watt has also played in his final game for the Houston Texans. Now, J.J. Watt is not the same player that he used to be, obviously. He finished last year with 5 sacks. So it's not like you're getting the J.J. Watt from 2014 that he's just going around and wrecking everybody in the backfield. I think everybody understands that. But if you're the Titans, as you look at your issues you have at pass rush, do you even consider trying to put together a package to bring in J.J. Watt? As unlikely as I think it would be that Houston would do that, do you consider, if you're John Robinson, making that phone call and trying to bring him into the fold?
Yeah, but I guess I'd be surprised if it works out. And, you know, like what is – I mean, the question right now with J.J. Watt is, you know, what's your cost-benefit on him? Like you said, 5 sacks. Been a great player. He's also been a very, you know, injury-plagued player.
Yep.
Terrific guy in the locker room. You know, but I don't think the Titans are necessarily lacking there. I think J.J. Watt's appeal to teams is definitely going to be a decent chunk of it is the intangibles. I just, you've got to draft people, and you've got to look at someone else in the free agent market. I think it's worth a call. I think it's certainly worth exploring. I wouldn't make that a high priority. And then, you know, on the Houston side of things, do you have interest in dealing anyone of value to someone in your division?
Yeah, that's going to be, I think, the most unlikely part of this. Like, if you're the Titans, you can make the call. I don't know how much interest Houston is going to have. Like, can you imagine what the reaction would be for the Texans fan base if J.J. Watt gets traded to the Tennessee Titans? Like, again, even any team in the AFC South, but especially this one, because there is a special place in the heart of the Tennessee Titans among fans in Houston. I just don't think that even the Texans are dumb enough to go down that road. But, man, if you're the Titans, I mean, J.J. Watt certainly would have helped last year, and you talk about getting somebody to go along on the line there. I mean, you need somebody alongside Simmons up there, and whether you're going the outside linebacker spot, whether you're asking him to come in and move around and play on the line. I mean, J.J. Watt can line up in a lot of different spots, but I just don't know if the production matches up as to where it's going to be worth the cost for a team making that call.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's a $17.5 million cap hit.
It's a lot.
In 21. I mean,
you know, some clowny money.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, that's the thing. You just went out and spent a lot to get nothing in the pass rush department. And so now, you know, any sort of deal could also include different negotiations on that. But, yeah, I don't know. I think he's going to be somewhere else for sure. And you're right. I mean, Texans fans, they're already mad enough. They have every right to be mad. You just throw that on the pile, throw that log on the fire. J.J. Watt coming to the Titans. I doubt it happens. I think it's worth a call, but they've got to do something. They've got to do several things, I think, and including in the interior to try to improve this ability to affect quarterbacks.
And there's a bunch of interesting names out there. Leonard Floyd is out there. Shaq Barrett, who just absolutely wrecked the Packers in the NFC title game. I mean, he's under a one-year, $15 million deal right now. He's going to be a free agent. That dude made him some money this season, has made him some money so far in the playoffs. Look, I think people are a little gun-shy right now about going out and trying to get some free agent pass rushers just based on the way it went for the Titans this past offseason. I mean, you can't really operate that way if you're a general manager and tie your hands behind your back like that. I mean, that's not going to be the way John Robinson does things. I agree. I mean, I think in the draft, you've got to make it a priority to find some edge rushers. But also, I mean, you can't be afraid, if you're the Titans, to go out and take that risk again in free agency. Now, obviously, maybe not bringing in Vic Beasley and Jadeveon Clowney, but if you can make a run for a Shaq Barrett or a Leonard Floyd, I think you've got to try, if you're John Robinson, to come in and try to fix this defense to get it to a place where it at least – is respectable from a pass rushing standpoint. Because if you can get there, still like a lot of pieces of your offense, and we'll see how the rest of that goes in terms of this offseason. But I think you got to take a swing at it if you're John Robinson. You can't be afraid to fail again.
Yeah, it's like Barrett's. I mean, Barrett, like you said, that he's a guy who he has just – it's like the old Reeboks with D. Brown, you know, pump up the value.
Oh, yeah.
On with his production in these big, big games. You're also – you got Bud Dupree, who is really interesting. Obviously – I think ACL this year. Yeah. So, you know,
Ngakoue is a free agent too, right? Like, he didn't sign.
I think that's right. Carl Lawson from Cincinnati is a really interesting player. Young player is a free agent. I think, and that's, you know, a guy that you wouldn't necessarily have to break the bank on, but who could really make a difference. There's some guys out there. I think it's probably has to be a combination. I don't see how you can go into this offseason and say, well, let's just go into the draft and handle it that way. Lot of edge rushers, you know, don't come right in and produce. I mean, you're in a situation of who's going to come in right now and have an impact, we know, in 2021. I think you have to go get somebody. It's just a question of who.
It is, and I think it's going to be handled in a multitude of fronts by the Titans. I mean, you've got to go into the draft expecting to get an edge rusher. I mean, we've seen some mock drafts already, kind of forecasting that's the way the Titans are going to go. It makes sense. If you get through this draft and like you don't have an edge rusher selected in the first couple of rounds, Titans fans are going to lose their mind.
I think you absolutely have to address this in the draft.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's
no bones about it.
Yeah.
Just look at the guest that we have scheduled for 8 a.m., DeMarcus Ware.
Yeah.
You don't get a guy like that in his prime in free agency, typically. I mean, you have to draft that individual. And that individual has been a thorn. Not having that individual has been a thorn in the Titans' side for years. So if Azeez Ojulari is there, Greg Rousseau out of Miami, if those guys are there when the Titans are on the clock, I would be highly disappointed if the Titans go a different direction than one of those guys.
What if they've signed two guys, though? What if they signed two veterans?
Well, it depends on who those veterans are. If it's Cam Wake 2.0, then yes, I would be disappointed.
But don't know. But well, whoever they sign, they're not planning on him to be Cam Wake 2.0.
Well.
I mean, no, it's not the idea.
What if they bring Vic Beasley back, baby? Come on.
What they hope versus what they're actually going to get can be two different things.
Right. I agree the idea you draft someone so that you can, again, so you can have someone on a rookie deal making that kind of production. Who's the last good edge rusher this franchise draft? Derek Morgan, I guess?
I would not.
Think he was underwhelming.
I would not categorize him as good.
No.
I mean,
he had one good year.
Javon Kearse?
It could be Javon Kearse.
I mean, Landry has been, you know, fine. But Morgan had more production than Landry's had, right? I'm going to have to go back and look at Morgan's stats. I mean, Morgan Arakpo had some time where it was a pretty good combination. This, right? I mean, when they were healthy.
Certainly compared to now, yes.
Yeah, I mean,
I would take Derek
Morgan
right now.
Purple people eaters compared to now. Now I got to go look at Derek Morgan's career stats. I think you're a little down on Derek Morgan.
He was just meh.
Yeah, I mean,
he was fine.
So what's Landry?
Meh. Better than meh.
Okay. So Morgan was meh. Landry's better than meh. Okay. I'm going to check.
I would
stats.
Take Landry over Morgan.
I think he might be giving Landry a little too much credit.
I mean, Landry is, you know, one thing Landry has not had, he has not had anyone on the other side who helps him. You know, he really hasn't. And I just, the guy makes plays. I think he's gotten better against the run. I know you want to see double-digit sacks when you draft a guy in the second round. But I think he's been pretty good. I think he's better than meh, for sure. Derek Morgan. I'm looking up Derek Morgan.
Over under 8.5, his best year.
He may have had 1 year over 8.5.
You are correct. And that was the year I was thinking of. In 2016, Morgan and Arakpo were pretty good. He had 9 sacks. Yeah, I mean, you know, he had 44.5 sacks with the Titans.
Over how many years?
He had, over, I guess that's 9 years. So it's about
not great.
About five a year. But that includes early 1.5, 2.5. You know, he had a 6.5, a 6, a 6.5, a 4.5, a 9, and a 7.5.
Well, they drafted
that's
him as
decent.
They drafted him as a 4-3 defensive end, and then they changed the scheme to 3-4, and they had to change his role within the defense.
Which
so
seemed
it
to help
a
him.
While.
Which seemed to help him, right?
Sure.
I mean, you know, would you take, so over an average of over an average of six seasons, he basically averaged about seven sacks a year. Would you take that now? I mean, I
probably.
Absolutely. I mean, but you just have to have other guys also,
right.
You know?
That's the challenge.
It's so hard to find the 12-sack guy, the 15-sack guy. They're so rare. But can you get a couple 7-sack guys? There you go.
That's the baby step that the Titans need to take.
Get somebody to sack a quarterback.
Hit the quarterback back there. When we come back, Joe Rexroad got upset once again yesterday on Twitter at a certain quarterback discussion that's recently been in the news via trade to the L.A. Rams. We'll react to that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.